Caduceus Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, Reflections on Death and Dying, Part 2. Before we get started on this topic, I'd like to say some words about Alice Bailey, the founder of Lucis Trust. Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thoughts also come from the work of Alice Bailey. Our ideas about death have been erroneous. We have looked upon it as the great and ultimate terror, whereas in reality, it is the great escape, the entrance into a fuller measure of activity, and the release of the life from the crystallized vehicle and an inadequate form. Last time, we talked about near-death experiences. Could you say more about this fascinating subject?
Yes, we introduced the topic. I don't remember really how much we got into it. Perhaps I should begin by reminding our listeners who heard the opening thought that you just gave from the writings of Alice Bailey about the release of life at the moment of death and about how it's a great escape, an entrance into a fuller measure of activity. I don't want people to think that that's a justification for suicide, for making a premature exit from this veil of tears and woe, which it is for many people who are suffering emotionally. But we know from near-death experiences and from the ageless wisdom, which affirms that the life does not end with the death of the body, that we don't escape anything with suicide. We just postpone our problems and come right back to them in the future and pick up the thread wherever we left off. We can't just cut and run, so to speak. So suicide doesn't solve anything, and I don't want people to think that this opening thought would be in support of that choice. It's better to stay with our problems, work through them as best we can, and know that every cycle that is sorrowful and difficult is followed by better times. That's the nature of life. The near-death experience is something that's been documented more and more, I guess, in the last 20 or 30 years, beginning with the research of Dr. Raymond Moody and Dr. Kenneth Ring, who was at the University of Connecticut for many years, also did a great deal of research into it. And this is the experience that apparently lots of people have of nearly dying. Some of them are sure that they have in fact died, in the sense they have left their body but remain in consciousness and are vividly aware of being conscious and yet completely apart from the body, which is usually undergoing some kind of trauma due to surgery or accident, or not always. Sometimes these experiences come on for, who knows, mystical reasons or stress of some other sort. But they affirm in an undeniable way for themselves that life does exist beyond the physical body. They come to the brink of death and yet realize there is no end to the, we could say, to the fact of being. And In fact, they feel quite liberated, quite freed, when they realize they aren't attached to the body.
That's right. And also, all of the senses, our five senses, they seem to still be functioning on this outer body experience. They can still hear, they can still see, they can still talk, although any communication, usually they describe as something like telepathy, with if they encounter other beings. So, and they feel this overwhelming sense of love. Many of them describe this atmosphere as an overwhelming sense of love that they suddenly find themselves in, and they're just enveloped by it, and it's very warm and peaceful, and many of them just want to stay there.
It's unjudgmental love, and yet completely clear-sighted, as they describe it. It isn't blind to who they really are, their faults, their weaknesses, as well as their strengths, but it is accepting.
Absolutely, and it's that same accepting and that one encounters at the level of the soul. Mm-hmm. I think it's the complete non-judgmental quality of love, and that's what really we have to begin to bring into the world as much as we can.
And there's a very interesting point about this experience of love, and many of them describe it as light, the light at the end of the tunnel. There are countless experiences of people who nearly die and are aware of this brilliant light awaiting them at the end of a passage. And most people who have had that experience describe this as a being of light, a being of love, as someone or something separate from themselves, a more evolved being, a loved one, a teacher, a master, whatever, an angel. Some of them call it God. Some of them believe they've met Jesus. But the names that people give to this being of love and light are interesting, because the Ageless Wisdom and Kenneth Ring himself believe that this being they are encountering is actually their soul. We are all of us personalities, limited beings with strengths and weaknesses, faults. We are all a work in progress on that level, growing toward a higher state of perfection, but not there yet. But we are also, all of us, the soul on the higher level. Our higher self, you could say, is the soul. And the writings of Alice Bailey say that the soul on its own level is already perfect. And that's interesting, because Kenneth Ring said he believed that this encounter with this being of light or love is one's total self or higher self. And he said, in his view, the individual personality is just a split-off fragment of the total self with which it is reunited at the moment of death. And he said that during ordinary life, the individual personality functions in a seemingly autonomous way, as though it were a separate entity, but in fact it's invisibly tied to the larger self of which it is a part. And this being, he said, seems so awesome, so foreign to one's individualized consciousness, that one perceives it as separate from oneself. But it actually is oneself in a higher form that one is seeing. I find that fascinating to think about, because that's saying that at the moment of death, we regain our full self. We rejoin with the rest of ourselves. Someone wrote a book once, "Where's the Rest of Myself?" Well, at the moment of death, we come back to who we really are, apparently. And we are much more than this limited person that dwells as a personality.
Yes, the soul is the enacting that restoration. It's the force of restoration. That's what the soul does at that moment. It restores that being, that incarnated being, back to its source. And that's the great force of the soul that is enabled to do that.
We think that who we are is the personality, the being that resides in a physical body, has emotions, thoughts, desires, dreams, hopes, wishes. we don't tend to think of ourselves as the soul, which is on its own level completed and perfected. And to me, this realization that all of us are a higher self and a smaller self gives us an idea of the work ahead of us, because the whole point of experience in physical manifestation on Earth is to ground or anchor the spiritual perfection of the soul, of pure spirit, in form. That's the point of life on Earth. It's redemptive. It's to redeem matter, including the body. And by recollecting the rest of ourself and gradually joining in consciousness the realization or the bridge between the higher and the lower self. Lower is not a word I really like. We could say between the inner and outer beings, the transcendent and the manifested aspects of ourselves, perhaps we could say. By rejoining those and making the consciousness complete and continuous, we're helping to anchor spirit on Earth.
And that's the whole purpose behind the work that humanity has to do, is to not only on an individual basis we go through this restoring process, but also between humanity and the spiritual hierarchy, the kingdom of God. There has to be this same reciprocity between the two kingdoms, and the bringing down into the physical manifested state that the qualities of light and love that qualify the inner kingdom of God.
This idea that the being of light and love that the near-death experience encounters, that is the higher aspect of oneself, would also explain why one's harshest judge at the end of life is oneself, one's soul, because the soul knows exactly what it intended to accomplish through any particular incarnation. And at the end of that life, there is a judgment as to success or failure in the soul's ability to impress its plan upon the consciousness of the manifested being in form. I suppose there's a greater or lesser degree of success depending on how responsive the dweller in the body is to the inner being, to the inner soul. And that judgment day that we all fear and that people think is a judgment rendered by some being sitting on a cloud, is in fact ourselves. We are our own harshest judges. And there's no escaping that ultimate verdict that we will render unto ourselves of our success or failure in living up to our higher knowledge. We can't live up to the knowledge of someone else, but we are meant to live up to our own highest awareness and principles.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, Reflections on Death and Dying, Part 2. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Death, The Great Adventure. Death, The Great Adventure is a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. Let me give you an example of a quote from the literature within Death, The Great Adventure. The present, and I quote, "The present cycle is the end of the age, and the next 200 years will see the abolition of death as we now understand that great transition, and the establishing of the fact of the soul's existence." Now, the special discount comes in the form of free shipping and handling. So what you need to do is send a check or money order for $11 to Lucis Publishing. Make sure you say that you've heard about the offer on the show and her site. The title of it, once again, Death, The Great Adventure. Send a check or money order, $11, to Lucis Publishing. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you need to get in touch with us for any reason, to order books, cassette tapes, or a package of general information about Lucis Trust, give us a call at our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Our website, www.lucistrust.org. And there's a lot of information that you can key into on our website. Many of the people who key into the website do so to hear the previous archived library of radio programs. So once again, it's 1-866-695-8247 for calling us. I was thinking that that's quite a quotation that I picked out from the book Death, the Great Adventure, that the abolition of death will be coming within the next 200 years. Even as I read that, I was dazzled. Could you comment on that somehow?
I don't know if I really understand the implications of that, but it seems to imply that there will be discoveries, perhaps by psychologists or scientists or combinations of them, that will affirm the continuity of life beyond the body. And the only thing I have heard along that line that's underway in terms of research is something going on at Princeton University to do with contacting people on the other side, so to speak, through the use of computer technology. I know very little about it, and it sounds so astonishing I probably shouldn't say a word, but I have heard rumblings of that.
There's a group in Europe, I think also maybe in Belgium, that is working just that way, and they claim they've already made contact by using the computer. They've made contact with the other side, with beings on the astral level. In the writings of Alice Bailey, he did say that this would occur very shortly, that there would be this communication. It would be proved of the other side by the use of radio and other means of electronic communication. So maybe that's really what's happening today.
Perhaps other implications of that thought would be that there will be more of a merging between the energy or etheric body that substands the physical, the energetic component that we can't see with the eye, but that in fact is the cause of the vitality of the physical vehicle. I do think science is getting closer to understanding that mechanism. I mean, the treatment of homeopathy is based on that, as is, I think, acupuncture and a number of other various treatments that realize there is that energy component to the physical body, and that seems to imply a kind of continuity beyond the body itself. Perhaps this statement will be realized in a number of ways. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think these near-death experiences that are being documented now and done so by scientists, people trained in evaluating and investigating these experiences, is showing or affirming that, in fact, life does continue beyond the death of the body. The people who have had these experiences have no doubt. And what's interesting is that there are similarities of experience that cross all differences of culture and nation and language and religion. So you can't say that they're all using a particular context for interpreting that experience. They come from many different backgrounds, but they describe their experiences in very similar ways.
Yes, and that's the amazing thing about it, because it's there is that similarity, and they come back from these experiences with a whole different outlook on life, and they come back, some of them come back very angry that they had to come back, and others come back with a renewed sense of living, because they've experienced that great love on the other side, and they know They have to express that in their own daily life. And others come back because they feel a strong sense of responsibility to whatever they were doing in the physical world, like taking care of one's children. And it's that strong desire, sense of responsibility, that actually pulls them back into the physical world and back into that life that they had before.
I think one impression they come back with is the realization that there is responsibility in everyone's life. We are all here for a reason, not just to learn lessons, as it said, but to fulfill responsibilities. And as you said, they might be to our children, they might be in the form of an occupation or whatever. Everybody would have to answer that for himself. But the idea that life is responsibility seems to be vividly impressed on them, and that they're not just here to enjoy themselves or to fulfill themselves or to meet their desires or whatever. It's an obligation that they have undertaken at birth that they then return with a greater commitment to realizing. I think some of us are born with a stronger sense of having a particular role to fill or a particular duty to accomplish, and others don't so much have that awareness. But the soul's whole intention is to serve. And these people that have had these experiences seem to realize that life is for service, and so they return with a greater commitment to the greater good, you could say, and not just to self-interest.
Yes, and also that's another good reason for not advocating suicide, because the soul has its own plans, and if one commits suicide, then he interrupts that plan. Mm-hmm. And the soul, then you just have to go back and restart the whole thing again in another lifetime. You haven't worked out the problems that should have been worked out in this life. So it delays your own evolution by this selfish act of suicide.
And that reminds me this realization that death is usually an event that's planned by the soul is another eye-opener, I think, because so much of modern society is geared toward denying death and to putting it off as long as possible. And I wonder how our approach to death would be transformed if we could realize that death is just as natural as being born and just as right in its own time. And I'm not sure if we should exactly welcome it, but accept it as the soul's determination to take another step forward in its plan. We can't tread water forever. We can't be in the same situation forever. There's need for change and growth, and death is part of that. And I wonder if the medical profession were assured that we are resilient enough to prepare for our own death and to cooperate with the soul's timing. I wonder if the medical profession would be freed from the burden that I think they feel that they have to keep us alive at all costs, because now we're in a stage where medicine has figured out how to keep us alive on machines or whatever for quite a long time, much more so than in earlier years, and it's causing real problems. Yes. And I don't think we can just blame the medical profession. Sorry. I think we also have to assure the doctors and nurses that we're grown up enough to handle that.
Well, yes, you can't leave it up to other people, because it's your death, it's your experience, and it's between you and your soul, and it should be left up to you when to make that transition. So it's people taking their own life in hand and demanding that they be given the freedom to depart whenever they feel the need, whenever they feel it's right and the timing is right. They usually know.
Yes, I think they do know. I think a person reaching the point of death does know and begins to prepare, whether they consciously realize it or not. Mm. I know that people in hospice care, the nurses and doctors, know the signs of the body preparing to die. And they, in hospice care, cooperate with and assist that process of dying, because it is a process, a stage-by-stage process of withdrawal from the body, and it's natural and understood. It would be nice if that understanding could be more uniformly grasped by society and medicine, too.
Yes, it's a question, a very vital question that needs a lot more discussion today about what death really is. So
there was that wonderful founder of hospice, Cicely Saunders, yeah, who recently died. Perhaps if people want to think about the work that she helped to establish and learn more about hospice care, they would be assured that we are taking strides towards a better and wiser and more humane approach to death, thanks to people like her. Alice Bailey said that the processes of dying and dissolution and the dissipation of forms go on every moment without producing contamination of the earth or disfigurement of the earth. The earth has had death occurring for millennia, and the withering of a flower, the death from old age of an animal or a tree, and the many diseases of human beings, all of this is typical of life in form. The Bible says, dust thou art, unto dust thou shalt return. And all of this, she said, is an absorption by the greater life of the lesser life. The disappearance of the form which the life had taken occurs at death, and this is true of forms in the animal and vegetable kingdoms, just as in the human kingdom. All of this is natural and utterly good and should not be feared, because the life within the form withdraws, but it doesn't disappear. It enters onto a, we could say, another plane, but it doesn't vanish. The death of the body or the form is not the end.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company. And that's the Alice Bailey book, Death, The Great Adventure. Death, The Great Adventure is a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. And the discount comes in the form of free shipping and handling. The price is $11, so what you need to do is send a check or money order for $11 to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you need to get in touch with us for any reason, give us a call at our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you.